Yes, sir.
His son is also a preacher. And I believe his dad is also a preacher.
Correct.
So, you ought to have some good sermons. Probably heard many sermons from your dad that you probably used over the years. He writes and publishes the Pulpit Preview, which includes sermon starters and sometimes even full outlines. In fact, there was one on there this morning. I don't know if you put it up there this morning or not.
I did.
And he's a prolific author. So let's give our attention to Brother Mark, and let's begin our Bible class.
Thank you. Well, folks, it's good to see you this morning. Hope that you're everybody doing well? Anybody not doing well? We're doing well, then. That's fantastic. Okay. Boy, it's good to be up here in Indiana. This is a pretty place. Nice. I come from northwest Alabama, and I bring you greetings from the Winfield congregation. They'll be meeting in just a few minutes. We're on Central Time, and so they'll be meeting, and I look forward to getting to know you and getting to know you better. God bless you, and just proud to be able to be together and enjoy the blessings that God has bestowed upon us. And truly, we're of all people most blessed. Amen? Amen. I mean, just so blessed, and that kind of thing. This morning, let's just think about some things in regard to this subject of the will of God. And how many times in the Bible do we run across that either phrase or the principle of the will of God? A couple of statements from the Old Testament, Psalm 40 and verse number 8. There the psalmist says in that amazing psalm, he said, "I love thy will, O Lord. I love thy will." And then Psalm 143 and verse number 10, there he says, "Teach me your will." And so the recognition of God's will, and then the desire to have God's will. From that, we know the passages in the New Testament, you know, the model prayer, that sometimes we call it, Matthew chapter 6. "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." There's the will of God. Jesus praying in the garden. And he was facing the crucifixion, a very difficult time, and he prayed in a very fervent way. Remember, his sweat became his great drops, as it were, great drops of blood. Luke 22:42 there, he said, "Not my will, but thy will be done." And so therefore, that submissive aspect. We know 1 John chapter 2, 15 through 17, we know it backwards and forwards. I know you do. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is of the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And he that doeth the will of the Father shall abide forever." And so therefore, the will once again. Now, I believe that when we see this phrase, or the principle, the will of God, we recognize that it's His will. It's not our will. It's not your will. It's not our will. It's His will, and we submit to that. And so, therefore, we are submissive people as Christians. And in submission, don't we need examples sometimes to follow? The perfect example, of course, is Jesus. And He provides for us that flawless example to follow, following His steps, Peter said. So therefore, as we look at the very qualities or characters in the Bible, we can see those that exemplify that principle of submission to the will of God and the blessings that they receive in return, or the blessings that are theirs because of doing the will. Think about your own life for just a minute. Have you been blessed in doing the will of God, that you recognize that if you were not to do the will of God, those blessings would be absent? Man, I can think of so many times in my life that by doing the will of God, protected or spared from the awful things of life, and by doing the will of God, blessed in so many ways. Well, certainly we recognize that the characters in the Bible, the people in the Bible, are there for a reason for us to learn. And Romans 15, verse 4, "The things that were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. I believe one of the great Old Testament characters that certainly demonstrated the desire and the application of doing the will of God through good times and bad, through thick or thin, through, you know, happy or sad, but whatever life threw at him, he maintained that consistency and discipline in doing the will of God. Take your Bibles. Job chapter 1. I believe Job certainly demonstrates, exemplifies, he shows to us the importance, the blessing, and the benefit of doing the will of God. Now, we know that Job was a real character. He wasn't like a Shakespearean, you know, actor or a figment of one's imagination. He was a real individual. Both Ezekiel and James confirmed that he was real. And so, therefore, we see that he went through real things, and since he went through real things, we can connect with him, because, folks, we're going through real things every day, aren't we? We face the temptations, the allurements, the enticements all around us, and we must stay strong and stay faithful. And just like Job, I believe we can learn some lessons. Take a look at just some of the verses in Job chapter 1. See what we can learn from him as he was going through life and how he handled it. Job chapter 1, verse number 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect, upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. That word eschewed means he shunned evil. Well, take a look at those four characteristics there. I believe these are characteristics that please God. We see them included in the Bible. God put his stamp of approval on them. We think about the first one there, that he was a perfect man, not flawless, but he was a man that approached his relationship with God in a serious manner. He was full of sobriety in mind, heart, soul, and strength, and so therefore he valued that relationship that he had with God. It was important to him. Number two, it says that he was upright. He walked through life with his head held high. Now, certainly not in arrogance or sinful pride, but rather in humility and sincerity, because in doing the will of God, there is a sense of gratification and peace that we can gain that just thrills our soul. There's no peace like the peace of laying down at the end of a day, knowing that we have done the will of God. And that is an upright life. Number three, it says that he feared God. Folks, let me ask you, where has the fear of God gone in our world? That troubles me. Now, the fear here is a double-sided fear. It's a fear that sees the power, the awesomeness of God, and cringes in regard to the fact that he is the creator and we are the created, but it also denotes the respect and the awe that we have for his majesty. And so here, Job was one that feared God. And then lastly, it says that he eschewed or he shunned evil. He knew evil existed, but he didn't want to have anything to do with it. As Paul would say, he avoided even the appearance of evil. Didn't want to get around it or be with it. He shunned it. Certainly, we would do ourselves a great amount of good to capitalize upon those four qualities and repeat them and grow them in our lives. And I believe that in doing that, we would see what was going on. Job was a pretty good guy, as one fella put it one time. But then verse number two, notice he had a big family. There it says, that were born to him, 7 sons and 3 daughters, 10 kids. I was talking about my son has 4 kids and he wants 7, and I said, that's great. Man, that's wonderful, you know. I was preaching down in northeast Alabama not long ago, and in the congregation there was one family that had 10 children, another one had 11, and a third one had 13. Man, I tell you what, don't you know that was an exciting household? Here's 10 children. Now, it says there were 3 daughters. I wonder if there's a little drama in that home. That's as far as I'm going to go with that. Okay. Beautiful. Oh, man, probably laughter and excitement and, you know, just getting with it. And There was a 10 in biblical literature is a number, and in numerology, that is the number that denotes completeness. Many believe that Job had a complete number of children. Verse number 3 talks about his portfolio of assets. Notice it says that his substance was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. Job lived in a time, he was a patriarch, and in a time of the patriarchs, that's when an individual was measured by the amount of goods they had. Someone might ask, well, who's the richest guy around here? And someone else would say, well, hands down, it's Job. Look at all the stuff he has. I see here that it says 500 female donkeys. And I've wondered why the gender is mentioned. I've often wondered why the gender was mentioned. And researching that and finding it out, I love milk. I like to drink milk, you know, I enjoy it. Anybody ever had any goat's milk? Drank any goat's milk? Pretty good stuff, you know, especially got stomach problems, you know, that's helpful. Anybody ever had donkey milk? In Europe, donkey milk is a very valuable commodity. Some research indicates that donkey's milk is closer to mother's milk than cow's milk, and it's valuable in Europe. Well, it's saying that Job had a dairy, and so therefore he took care of every aspect of his family. He was handling things, and he provided for the physical needs of his family. The last part of verse number 3 says that he was the greatest of all the men of the East. Here's your homework assignment. Today, tomorrow, the next day, read the first 5 books of the Bible, first 5 books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, and read it and find every time it uses the word East. And you'll find this, that the word east denotes more of a principle than a direction. Oh yes, there is a direction, but in going east, there is a principle applied. Let me give you a few examples. When God cast Adam and Eve out of the garden, he placed an angel with a flaming sword at the door of the garden, and do you remember what side of the garden it was on? East, exactly. Yeah. Cain was expelled from the presence of the Lord. He killed his brother. And when he left the presence of the Lord, guess what direction he went? East. The people began to clump up, and they started building a tower, and that tower reached higher and higher and higher into the heavens. They called it the Tower of Babel. And do you know what direction it was in? The east. Abram and Lot, their herdsmen, had conflict. And Abram said to Lot, well, okay, you pick what land you want, and I'll take what's left over. And Lot, he picked the good land. Do you remember which direction that land was? East. There were twin cities in that direction that God rained fire and brimstone down upon for sin. Remember their names? Sodom and Gomorrah. In fact, in the book of Jonah, when Jonah preached to Nineveh and everybody repented, it said from the king all the way down. It's amazing. It says all the way down to the animals. I don't know what that means. But nonetheless, I believe it's just an indication of every single person in Nineveh repented. Jonah went outside the city, climbed up on top of a hill, and sat there to wait to see what God would do. And he got mad when God did not punish those people. And that hill was on guess what side of Nineveh? The east. It seems that whenever people started going east, they went into sin. But now, according to this verse, there is a man in the east that is a prime character of goodness. He stands head and shoulders above the rest. He is morally good, full of integrity, and it says he's the greatest man of the East. His name is Job. Interesting that we read that. Verse 4, it says that, and his sons went and feasted in their houses, everyone on his day, and sinned and called their three sisters to eat and drink with them. The little phrase in Hebrew in this verse, verse number 4, his day indicates a birthday. Job's family was much like our family, you know. Maybe you say, I'll get the balloons and you get the cake and we'll meet at Cracker Barrel and we'll celebrate Aunt So-and-so's birthday, you know. We'll cook out in the backyard and have a little birthday party. We do that. So did Job and his family. There's not a vast difference between Job and his family and our families. And then in verse number 5, notice what it says. It was so that when the days of feasting had gone about, they had taken place, that Job sent, and he sacrificed, or he sanctified them, and he rose up early in the morning, indicating urgency, and offered burnt offering according to the number of them. And this is what Job did. It says here that he did this. It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their heart. Thus Job did this continually. Job was afraid that when his children got together that they had done bad things. He said he was afraid that they had sinned and cursed God. And so what did he do? As the patriarch for the family, he took it on his responsibility to sacrifice for his children. He cared for their spiritual lives. Father's Day is next Sunday? I'm preaching on Job 1, verse 5. I need to be a better father in caring for my family. And I believe that fathers everywhere, there's room for improvement in how we care for our family. Job was afraid that they had sinned and cursed God. The word cursed in this verse in Hebrew is the word brak. That's the word. But it denotes not just those four-letter words, you know, the blankety-blank this and the blankety-blank that. It includes that, but it's much bigger. It denotes that Job was afraid that they had acted in such a way to sever their relationship with God, and they were turning about face and heading in the opposite direction. That's the word brak there. He was afraid of that. And so what did he do? He sacrificed for them. And it said he did it continually, repetitiously. He was always doing it. Job is a great person, I believe, that we can notice. Verse number 6, notice this. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves to the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Folks, when something good is taking place, isn't that when Satan always shows up? And he wants to stick his big fat nose right in the middle of everything good. The phrase here in Hebrew, came also among them, means that he was present, but nobody invited him. Whatever this meeting means, I'm not yet fully grasped, but I know what's going on. God is serving as the CEO. He's the chairman of this meeting. He's in charge. And in this case, they were, as it were, the sons of God. Whenever you run across the phrase sons of God in the Bible, usually, predominantly, that will denote angelic beings. I don't know a whole lot about angels other than what the Bible presents, but nonetheless, here is a meeting where the angels came to present themselves to God, and Satan showed up and got right in the middle of it. But now notice what happens here in verse number 7. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? In other words, where did you come from? Satan said unto the Lord, he said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. In other words, I've been everywhere, man. That's where he had been. Kind of reminds me of 1 Peter 5 and verse number 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, goeth about seeking whom he may, do you know what the word is? Devour. And that word devour there does not just mean to sit down and consume. You know, we say, well, I'm going to sit down and devour this meal. What? No, it means more than that. It's the word that means to rip, tear, shred, mutilate. And that's what the devil is trying to do to every one of us. I've often said, and I believe this to be true, the devil is not after the adulterer. The devil is not after the fornicator. The devil is not after the drunkard. The devil is not after the pedophiles. The devil is not after them. And you know why? He's already got them. He's after folks that want to be together on Sunday in worship. He's after folks that want to study their Bible and to pray and to do good. That's who the devil's after. And so here he's going about to and fro seeking whom he may find in everything. Notice in verse number 8, "And the Lord said unto him, Hast thou considered my servant Job? There is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and eschews evil." Okay, have we already run across those four qualities there in verse number 8? Yeah, verse number 1. Yeah, but folks, there is a vast difference between verse 1 and verse number 8. I mean, there is different, there as far as the east is from the west. And the reason is because of the one that is speaking. Verse number 1, Job is the narrator. He is the one doing that. But in verse number 8, who's speaking in verse number 8? God. And look what he says about Job. I've wondered, you know, if God could let me know, and I know God only speaks to us through His Word, but if He could let me know how I'm doing today, what would He say? I hope He would say, "Oh, he's a perfect man, an upright man, one that fears me and shuns evil." I would want that. Imagine an epitaph like that on a headstone. Something right there. So we've got this going on. Notice in verse number 9, Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught or nothing? Is there no reason that he fears you?" And then notice what he says in verse number 10. Hast thou not made a hedge about him, about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed him, blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land." Well, yeah. That's exactly what's going on in Job's life. Now, folks, we're all blessed people. Go to a third world country, and you'll really realize, you know, those of you that have traveled outside the United States to impoverished places, man, I've seen some things. In visiting all seven continents of the world, I've seen some poverty-stricken people, and that just tells me each time, Mark, you are so blessed. More than you need, more than you want. And, well, in this case, was Job blessed? Yes. Yes. God had been good to Job. And, well, folks, he's been good to every one of us. And Satan is saying, well, the only reason Job fears you, the only reason that Job serves you is because of all the stuff you give him. That's a pretty big accusation there. Well, in verse number 11, "But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse you to his face," or curse you to your face. But, well, that word cursed has come up again. So Satan says, if you put forth his hand and you affect him, he will leave you like that. He will turn about face and he will sever his relationship. Now, folks, down in Alabama, we call that a challenge. And a challenge must be met. And guess what's going to happen? That challenge is going to be met. So the Lord says in verse number 12, "The Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in your power, only upon himself, but put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord." God says to Satan, you can do whatever you want to him, just don't kill him, but you can do whatever you want to him. Well, challenge accepted. I know from the previous statements that God had a very high opinion of Job. After all, he was perfect and upright. He feared him. He shunned evil. Could Job stand this test, this challenge? Well, let's see. Can Job maintain His faithfulness in the will of God, even when Satan is unleashed upon him? Well, let's see. Verse number 13, there was a day. Now, in your text, do you have the phrase a day? Does anybody have a week? Anybody have a month? No, it's a day. The word day in Hebrew is the word yom. It's the very same word that in Genesis 1 and 2, God made the sun and the moon. And when he made that, he said, this is the first day. This is the second day. It's the word that denotes a 24-hour period. And here, there was a day. Wow, that must have been something for a day. And so there was a day when the sons, his sons and daughters, were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job, and he said, the oxen were plowing, and the female donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. I doubt that that message would have been delivered with the monotone voice that I used in reading it. If this catastrophe had happened, I imagine there would have been emotion, voice inflection. There would have been, you know, I was out there and the Sabaeans came down and they took out their swords and they were just killing everything. I don't know how, but I don't think it would have been, well, Job got a problem, you know, the servants are dead. I believe there would have been some emotion involved. Something horrible happened. And when we tell of something horrible, oftentimes we're passionate. Well, this is a tough time for old Job because he's just seen a major hit in regard to his employees and his livestock. Notice the next phrase, verse number 16. While he was yet speaking, there came also... While he was yet speaking, do you understand it the same way I do? The first messenger, it seems, had not even delivered everything with this message until in comes a second messenger with an equally, if not, message of greater severity. So it's just hitting it. Boom, boom. Verse 16 says... While he was yet speaking, there came also another saying, the fire of God is fallen. What's the fire of God? That's lightning. That phrase is the same phrase used when Elijah challenged the prophets of Baal. He built an altar, soaked it in water, and cried out to God, and God rained down fire upon it. What did he do to that altar? Consumed everything, even dried up the water. Same phrase, lightning. So the fire of God has fallen from heaven and has burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. I alone have escaped to tell you. Well, now, how many sheep? Go back to verse number 3, and it says there were 7,000 sheep. I've seen lightning storms in my life. Have you? I mean, that would stretch from... You know, the entirety of my vision. I mean, go all the way, splinter everywhere. And you say, that is the most amazing thing. I don't know if I've ever seen a lightning storm that could consume 7,000 sheep and the shepherds that cared for them. That's incredible, isn't it? I think if I came from that, if I was the only one that escaped from that and came back to tell Job, oh, my, what a message. Job is seeing his bank account just bleed. It's hemorrhaging. Well, verse number 17. While he was yet speaking, there came another. Well, here's another one. And said, the Chaldeans made out three bands and fell up. The Chaldeans made three bands? Okay, these guys have military training. Two flanking, one frontal assault. They're organized. Probably mercenaries. They know how to raid a village. So the Chaldeans, they made three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away. slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I have alone escaped to tell you. Could it get any worse? Can you imagine losing every single penny that you have? And even the people that you're paying to work for you. Man, that'd be a tough day, wouldn't it? But folks, Job, as one little fella said, Job ain't seen nothing yet. He's fixing to go from the frying pan into the fire. And we read in verse number 18, while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, thy sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in the eldest brother's, house. How many children did Job have? 10? They're all together, and they're in the house. And in verse number 19, and behold, there came a wind from the wilderness, a great wind from the wilderness, smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only have escaped to tell you. How much time we got? 10 minutes. Northwest Alabama it's been called the nucleus of Tornado Alley. We've had so many tornadoes to hit our little town. It's just, you know, you think, well, when is it going to happen next, you know? In the last 3 years, 4 tornadoes have hit downtown. You know, I missed our meeting house by just a length of a parking lot. And it just, you know, when I go to Eastern Europe and I tell people, they ask about the weather, how's the weather where you live? And I tell them about the tornadoes and they go, why do you live there? Y'all know something about tornadoes up here, probably. Yeah. A great wind. A great wind that could destroy a house. And in that house are Job's 10 children. And now this messenger, the only one that escaped, has come to tell, to give this horrible message. That's horrible. I don't know what it's like to lose a child. Some of you did. I don't know anything about that. I can't say I know what you're going through because I do not. I've wondered, though, is losing 2 children twice as worse? Or if you lost 5 children, is that 5 times? Or 7? Or 9? What if 10? Just like that. I'd probably say I've never had a day that has been as bad as this day with all 4 of these messages. Now, the question is, you know, how does a person react to this? What do they do? That's the first thing that comes to my mind. What would a person do? And in this case, we don't have to guess because we're told, because in verse number 20, we're told what Job did. It says, number 1, he arose. He did not stop. He kept on living and rent his mantle. That means he tore his clothes. You know, this morning when I was getting dressed, I took a picture of myself in the mirror and I sent it to my wife. I said, do I look okay? I wanted to check, you know. I said, is this tie okay? Yes. I said, now my socks match. I know that. And just need to get approval, you know. I don't want to look like a weirdo and everything, but I wanted to look good, you know. But, you know, folks, if what had happened to Job happened to me, I would not care if I matched. I wouldn't care if I was in style. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care if my clothes were expensive or inexpensive. I would not care about my fashion one bit. Then it says, he shaved his head. I saw that it was going to be kind of damp today, so I put a little extra hairspray on, you know. And I love when I have a good hair day, you know. It's a good day, you know. But if what had happened to Job happened to me, I would not care how my hair looked. That would be the least of my concerns. And then it says, he fell upon the ground. I'd probably lose strength, become weak. But folks, it's the last two words of that verse that interest me the most. When what happened to Job, and he reacted to it, what is it? He said, and worshiped. I've seen people crawl in a bottle of pills, crawl into a corner to never emerge. But when Job went through that, he went to the Lord. I hope I always do that. But the next verse, and we'll conclude with this, you think, well, what would a person say? Now, here's very interesting, because we don't have to guess in verse number 21, and said, notice what he said, naked came I out of my mother's womb. Now, folks, how do every one of us come into this world? Naked out of our mother's womb. We come into this world with how much? Nothing. And then it says, and naked shall I return thither. When we leave this world, how much do we take with us? Not a single thing. So what Job is doing, he is establishing parameters. He's talking about the time between birth and death. Now, if we were to choose a word to describe that time period, that window of time between birth and death, what would be a simple word that would describe that time period between birth and death? Someone say. What? Dash? Yeah, I know that poem. Yeah, the dash. Yeah, our life, our existence. That's where it's at. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that's where every single one of us is at this moment. And so what else happens? What else did he say? The Lord gave. Everything that Job had, where did it come from? It came from God. Everything that we have, where does it come from? It comes from God. And he wants us to manage it well for him. And then it says, and the Lord hath taken away. Now let me ask you this. If everything belongs to the Lord, and he decides to take away from you and I what he has given us, does he have a right to do that? And not even hang around and listen to us complain about it. But it's the last phrase in that verse that interests me the most. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I hope I always respond and say, in times of difficulty, Lord be praised. Now notice the last verse, and we'll sum up with this. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now look at that word, all. How much does all cover? Everything? So in all of this, in all of what Job went through, in everything that he encountered, in all the things, he didn't sin. I believe his priority was the will of God. And then it says, he didn't charge God foolishly. He didn't start blaming everything and everyone, let alone God, for the things of difficulty in his life. I want to be more like Job. Life's going to throw a lot of things at us, and as it does, may we live and respond in regard to the will of God as Job did. Thanks for your attention this morning. God bless you today.